it was the first time I had ever heard that you could get a degree in winemaking. And I said, that's for me.
Robert Parker has established himself as a critical reviewer with an acute palate. I'm just wondering where that female is.
The wine industry is addicting. It draws you back.
To me, the romance is in the glass, and it's when you're done with the bottle.
And we would spend our summer afternoons swimming in the irrigation pond for 3 to 4 hours a day.
Even though it's tough work, nobody said it would ever be easy. You know, we do it as a family.
In the final analysis, somebody's going to pop the cork, and they're either going to like the wine or they're not going to like the wine.
Since I made Cabernet all my life at Beringer, I buy Cabernets, so should never let a winemaker own their own winery.
We were either going back to Switzerland to go to hotel school, or we were going to come to California. We had to get closer to the vineyard thing.
It's like when you go to one of those winemaker dinners where the winemaker doesn't quite get that not everyone is telling jokes about the acid level in the wine all night.
We say, so drink the wine. That's kind of our motto here at Life Between the Vines. One of the cool things about wine, besides drinking it, is the people you drink it with. And the stories you hear and tell with wine all come together to make every bottle unique. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle and welcome to podcast number 74. This month, we feature Paul Leary, owner of Blackbird Vineyards in Napa Valley.
The subject is Merlot, and Paul Leary of Blackbird Vineyards knows all about Merlot. And when you listen to this interview, you'll know why. The fact is, some of the finest wines in the world are made from Merlot, period. After talking with Paul several times in Napa about Merlot and other things, we were lucky to get him into our studios while in Milwaukee for a wine dinner. Well, we're here with Paul Leary, president of Blackbird Vineyards. How you doing, Paul?
I'm doing well. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Welcome to Milwaukee. Is this your first trip here?
Second trip.
Oh, really? So how long ago were you here last?
Probably about 6 months.
Yeah.
We just launched with a wholesale partner at the end of last year, end of 2011. So this is the second trip back to do an event with an account has become a big supporter. Mason Street Grill.
Excellent.
Right here in downtown Milwaukee. Great, great account. Good people. I've really gotten behind the wine. And it's part of the Pfister Hotel, and they take great care of us as well. When we come out, they put us up for the night. Works out well.
That's not a bad deal. Has Blackbird been in Wisconsin for a length of time at all?
No. We previously sold to private clients, you know, consumer direct, but we've only started selling wholesale within the last year.
Oh, great. Well, good. I hope it goes well. I am a fan of your wine for sure. The whole idea of, you know, focusing on Merlot, I think, is awesome, as well as being, you know, the whole Bordeaux concept, which is obviously your influence, I would hope would go over very well.
I think so. You know, Wisconsin's one of those markets that not as many people spend as much time on, meaning wineries. So there's greater opportunity here to gain share or share of mind because people, when they come and think of this area, they think of Chicago. They think of spending time in the suburbs of Chicago. I would rather spend time in markets where there's less competition, if you will, and you can create greater relationships. So we're looking forward to it. We have the Blackbird wines in market, and we also have the Recuerdo wines from Argentina now in market here too, so it's great.
Yeah, we're going to talk about your Argentinian connection here in a minute. You've just made like 10,000 Milwaukee fans just by saying that, though, so you know that, you know, especially the not the big city thing.
Understood.
I want to go back a bit to your own history and a bit about you. You had been with Duckhorn at one time.
Right. So I was with Duckhorn for about 7.5 years from, 99 to 06. And Dan Duckhorn, the founder with Margaret Duckhorn, was a great client of Trevigna Restaurant in St. Helena. You know, it's been around since the mid-'80s. And I was a general manager there from 96 to 99. And it had run its course. I was working about 16 hours a day, an amazing experience. That restaurant, as you probably know, back when in the Napa Valley, was it. It was the spot to go. We literally turned people away every day for lunch and dinner. And as it ran its course and my body literally was breaking down at a young age, I'm like, this may not last forever. I was missing friends' weddings. I was missing holidays. I'm like, need to make a life change. Didn't want to leave the Valley. Dan Duckhorn had a house account at Trevigna. And pulled him aside one day and said, I'd love to talk with you and see if there might be an opportunity with Duckhorn. And at the time, they had Duckhorn Vineyards. Paradox was a new brand. And GoldenEye was merely a twinkle in his eye, the Pinot Noir brand out of the Anderson Valley. So it was a great time to be able to come on, spend years not only working with an established brand, Duckhorn Vineyards, but building out, you know, new brands in Paradox and GoldenEye. And the amazing thing about Dan is he truly treated me like a son, meaning that he beat me up a lot. And there's some great stories behind that, but he really took some time with me. And I was able to really understand the wine business from his perspective, which, as we all know, is a pretty solid perspective, 30-plus years in the industry, and, you know, really did a lot for not only Napa Valley, but Merlot in particular.
Oh, yeah. And Dan's just a nice guy. But you've opened this door, so we're going to have to walk through it. How did he beat you up? And was this an educational thing?
It was. It was very positive. I was a member of the executive committee, you know, which was a group of managers or principals within the company that met on a monthly basis to discuss all things about the business. And I would always, you know, find a way to have a counterpoint to something. You know, and a couple times he literally, you know, was in my zone, shall we say, pointing across the table. There's 16 people in the room and, you know, basically refuting what I was saying to the point of people are getting a little concerned. And I didn't take it that way because I knew that, you know, he's the boss. It's his company. But he doesn't want yes man either. He wants people that, you know, will ask questions, challenge, et cetera. And I knew this clearly to be true because he'd come up to me a day later and say, nice job. But just so you know, I run the business. But he knew that, you know, I had the ability to bring some fresh ideas to the table. And that was important, especially at that time as they were growing. And I think that's important in life. You have to question. You have to believe in what you're doing. Because when you believe in what you're doing, you're going to question it. And that's how I try and instill, that's what I try to instill in our employees, is don't just do what I say. Please don't. Listen to what I say and refute it and come up with a better way, please. Because if you just do it, that's only so much fun. But if you challenge the notion in the right way and think about how there may be other opportunities or solutions, we'll all be better for it.
I agree. And I think the wine business does tend to have a lot of people who are very independent thinkers.
Right.
So they're always trying to find something a little bit new, different, whatever it might be.
Exactly. And I think in the wine industry, you have to do that at some level because it's a highly competitive business. It's so interesting when you travel the world and you tell people that you're in wine, they think it's literally a hobby. And, oh, I'd love to do that. It seems like so much fun. I'm like, really? So you want to deal with one of the most compliant businesses in the United States? You want to deal with a highly fragmented, highly competitive business? I mean, it's a very intense business, you know, to deal with. But it is wine. And it's amazing because you're not, you know, with all due respect, selling plastics, if you would quote The Graduate. You're selling something that is so emotionally connecting to people. And so all the things that you want to do different, and you can do so many, you know, things different these days with technology, et cetera, but it does come back to relationships. And that's truly what it's all about because wine is a very emotional product. And I will never forget, go back to Duckhorn for a moment, how many people would walk into the Duckhorn Vineyards Estate House and go, Dan, where's Dan? Danny boy, where are you? Literally, and we had open offices, so you could hear all the time. Like,
oh, yeah, it's another a lot of room. Yeah.
Another friend of Dan that he met on the road that he was their new best friend because of that personability and the ability to make, you know, the connection. And that counts because wine is about the origin of the product. And the point of what I mean by that is, as I say to people all the time, this shirt, you really don't care where my shirt comes from as much. A little bit more these days. Maybe it's organic or from, you know, locally produced. Wine is about the origin. You generally want to go where that wine is grown and experience it firsthand. And the Napa Valley is a perfect example of that. And so that's where, hopefully, as I say to people all the time, you know, I'm here, meaning I'm in your market. That means you need to come see me. And there's reciprocity in it. And it won't hurt, I swear. Well, it may hurt the next day a little bit, but I can't control that. That's your call.
That just depends on how much you imbibe.
Exactly.
It's amazing to me how many small wineries invite people to their homes to taste. Gosh, I don't know if I want to invite strangers in my house to taste wine.
And I say that to people all the time. You're absolutely correct. If you look at a lot of these small wineries in the Napa Valley, and when I'm saying small, you know, I'm talking about 3,000 cases, 2,000 cases, you know, less than 5,000, let's call it. And you look at them and you wonder, why are they successful? Well, hopefully they make good wine. And they may have good packaging and branding and some good editorials to back it up, but it's about the relationships. You can literally pinpoint the individuals that literally spend their days and their nights inviting people into their homes. And when you do that, you create such a strong you know, rapport with these people, that what are they going to do when they go home? They're going to tell their friends and colleagues about it. And, you know, you think about viral marketing these days, the word Twitter and Facebook comes to mind. No, it's about the relationships and just the vis-a-vis with people in the office, across the dinner table, on the golf course. Those are the type of viral relationships you want to create, because it all comes back to, oh, well, I'm going to the Napa Valley and this person told me to go there because of this amazing, you know, connection they had with them. So that is absolutely the best way to spend your time, my time, meaning as a business person, is connecting with your clients in the Valley.
I think it's a fair thing to say that that's a great model for a lot of other businesses that maybe isn't practiced.
Without question. You know, and I read a lot of journals and magazines to try and keep my mind wide open every day. And it all goes back to that. You know, if you read about the great leaders in the world, you know, it's the CEO of Southwest Airlines who's working the counter on Christmas Day, literally working the ticketing counter. It's the people that get in the market, or Jeff Bezos of Amazon, who literally has an empty chair at every meeting that they do. And who's the empty chair for? The customer.
Nice.
Right?
Yeah.
If you don't think that way, you're going to get caught up in your processes and everything, and you're not going to remember, well, listen, we don't understand who's buying our product. So spending time focusing on them. And, you know, hospitality is so important in our business because there are so many great wineries, great wines in this world. I mean, it's staggering, isn't it? Besides cereal in a California grocery store, if you go down any aisle that's more impacted, it's wine.
Right.
I mean, it's truly wine. And so it's an amazing, I get confused, right, on how many products and labels out there. So you can only imagine the average customer. So it comes back to, oh, remember when we visited this winery, they were so amazing, and guess where that hand went on the shelf? It went right to that. It's all about hospitality.
It's that whole connection. And I'm really glad you said that. I get confused. That's something all of our listeners are going to relate to, because that's where intimidation begins, is right in the local liquor store, wine store, wine specialty shop, when they see all these labels and they go, gosh, where do I go from here? Well, you're no different.
Right. And the challenge is in the wine world is that each country has different laws on how labeling occurs. So what happens in the U.S. and how we would label wine is not necessarily what happens in, you know, France. And so there's a lot of confusion there, you know, let alone just in California. You know, the way I learned the business is this. If you follow a brand, that's the smartest thing to do. Don't think about vintage as much. Follow the brand, because the brand should give you the quality. The varietal is going to give you the style of wine that you're going to enjoy. And the vintage is going to give you character. So think about that again. The brand should give you quality. The varietal will give you the style of wine you're drinking. And the beauty and the pain of wine is the vintage, because it'll give you a reflection of what Mother Nature provided or taketh away that year.
Ain't that the truth?
Exactly.
I would relate to that, because I am a big Paradox fan. Not quite as vintage related because of the kind of blend it is, but
right,
still an amazing wine, and you start to follow it. And those are the kind of wines that get you branched off into other ones because of its price point.
Exactly.
And its style.
Exactly.
So, you know, places like that, maybe not a good place to start for price, but
under $50, that's a start.
Yeah.
It's Napa Valley, so let's be careful. It doesn't get much lower. If you're selling $20 wine in Napa Valley, you've actually got a special process going.
I don't know who that is.
It's very rare.
Yeah.
It's out there, but it's very rare, and it's going to be coming even less in the next few years just because there's a shortage of grapes. Because there's more producers than ever, and there's more people drinking wine than ever.
This is the end of part one of our interview with Paul Leary of Blackbird Vineyards. Download parts 2 and 3 from lifebetweenthevines.com or iTunes.